Things like that start.
His brother-in-law and father-in-law and his wife and his sister went back fishing yesterday. John took them out. They had 60 of them back. Four flying. All of them not out. 60-some of them were 150. So they got a big time. They were going to go like 38 to 40 miles because they figured it would start up too much. But my daughter-in-law wasn't feeling well. And they didn't quite fall.
Well, Chris went for me a couple of days. He went back away from it.
So it's definitely on the 18th?
Just trying to short change.
Not yet, not definitely.
Okay. Jumping back forward, yeah. Maybe we made a couple $100 in that order.
Has Rob gone?
Not yet.
He told me the end of the week, I thought.
Well, he may have happened.
He told, Rob told me officially the 15th. Yeah. Pat.
Yeah. He was there.
Why you not, if you haven't even talked to him, he just told me to make one.
Pat, what?
You?
Yeah.
Hey, I do remember him, I had somebody say, is that his name? You know, I think a lot of Rob and I are good friends, but I miss Jack, I would say more.
You're both good.
Jack would go out on a limb, or Rob never did like that on a limb.
So both did good for the team.
I would have a little hard time. Jack's enjoying his return, and of course you see him, I guess, to the...
It would be, is what I'm voting now.
Oh, you want something on that now?
Lexi Beth's got the flounder.
Do you ever have meetings?
Yeah, we have webinars, we had a meeting in...
We have web ones, is all we ever have.
Yeah.
I'm still in chat, I have no idea why, because they don't have that, I don't remember the last time it happened.
Maybe it's not the same thing. I'm not trying to rush.
You don't mind? I mean, some people have been sitting around for quite a bit. They got here a little bit early, so I mean, I got the door open so anybody needs to come in. My name is Pat Deere. I'm the Deputy Chief of Issues Management here at VMRC, and welcome to the, this is a public hearing by ASMFC's Addendum 6, Striped Bass Fisheries Management Plan. Max Appleman is the Fisheries Management Coordinator for ASMFC. He's going to be giving a presentation. Alex Aspawall is our Striped Bass Technical Representative on the committee, so a lot of people know Alex. Whenever we're having our fin fish management committees, he's the one, you know, doing most of the analysis and calculations for us on those state waters. So concentrating on the addendum 6 tonight. If there's time afterwards and anybody has any questions about things that Virginia is considering, we'll try to take those up. But this meeting is primarily about addendum 6, the ASNSC addendum 6. So with that, and please turn off your cell phones. And Mike?
So, Pat, I would ask that if you could clarify for us that, I mean, I know we're here to talk about the addendum, but last month, BMRC instituted an emergency rule that is permanent. So I'm confused now why we should care about the addendum if we already have our rule in place that's permanent.
It isn't permanent. We kind of had a difficulty when we did it. We could have gone through our normal public comment. We could have done a request for a public hearing in our last meeting and then done a public hearing in September, but it would have only given 8 days notice before the recreation season was supposed to open. It's a, you know, if you can convince the commission's mind to change what's in that plan.
Can you talk about how that affects this?
How that affects this?
Yes.
It's somewhat independent, but we're hoping that what we do, we're going to get conservation equivalency.
So you're hoping that the emergency rule will be a conservation equivalency as one of these addendum ones?
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't want this to become a Virginia, what Virginia's doing versus what I'll take one more question about this.
Following up on what he said, entitlement to the ASNSC, I understand the necessity for an emergency regulation for the recreational side. The commercial side, though, we're trying to be proactive, to reduce the size of fish, which has been on the reduction for many years. How did that constitute an emergency regulation? It seems like it was violative of 28.2203.
What I would recommend is you let the commissioners know that you don't want that to take place until a later date.
Well, yes, the main thing, they should have a public hearing, otherwise it was violative.
Well, there will be a public hearing. I mean, we talked about this last month.
Yeah.
There will be a public meeting September 24th at our commission meeting. I will make sure that, you know the last, what we did was we moved it up. Usually they do all the habitat issues first and then fisheries goes afterwards. So we start sometime around noon, but they put that at the front of the agenda to get it, to get it out front. If it's going to be earlier, I will let everybody know in advance. So if you want to come and you want public comment, please come. Or you can write it. You can send public comment to me as well about that particular amendment.
Quick data question on this specific document we're talking about tonight. Maybe Mr. Aspinall would be the person to ask. This only went up to 2017 with regard to the commercial landings. What was our commercial harvest, that's dead discharge and landings, as well as the average size fish? I was looking for that, couldn't find it on them, so I couldn't find it on BMRC, so let alone ASMFC, so I was just curious what our trend is.
Well, it varies by commercial gear type and area, bay versus coastal.
For the bay, the commercial harvest, since that's usually clumped together as one for the purpose of ASMFC management, what was our harvest? As defined in this document by ASMC, which is landings and dead discharge, right?
I think there's a table in the addendum. A
couple of things.
So but I don't know if we have commercial
so
by
have
number in there.
Yeah, so I have commercial landing for Virginia and Chesapeake Bay
right.
In 2017.
That's in here, the 2017. I guess people are checking up on it, but I was wondering what 2018 was.
2018 is 950,724 pounds.
957.24.
Right.
And that includes dead discharge. I mean, that's
no,
that's
this is
landing. Okay. Because I think in your chart in the public comment document, when they list like the 2017 harvest, doesn't that include dead discharge?
If we can go through the document, yeah. And then if you still have questions at the end,
I'm just trying to compare.
This is putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, Virginia put something forward, and I realize that, and we can talk about that afterwards. Max came down for this, and this is their public hearing.
Well, that's why I was asking because it's specific to the document.
But let's let Max go through the presentation. You can answer it. He's gonna. Yeah, answer your questions, we'll go through each option, everyone will have a chance to say what their preferred option is and provide comment, And when we're done, if people have questions about what Virginia is proposing, we can talk about that a little bit, okay? All right, thank you.
Thanks, Pat. So as Pat said, I'm the fishery management plan coordinator for striped bass at the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. And I'm here to conduct the hearing, run through the draft addendum. I have about a 20-minute presentation or so. We'll stop for questions at that point, clarifying questions on the addendum, and then we'll move into the public comment portion. I believe we had a sign-up sheet in the back. I hope everyone signed in. And if you put a check next to your name, that'll indicate to me that you'd like to make a comment. If you forgot to put a check, it's okay. Just raise your hand when we get to that point. So with that, I will get going here. Little outline of my presentation. Screens are up there for me. The mic is over here, but I'm going to talk this way and just kind of look back and forth and do this as clean as possible. So I'm going to run through the entire addendum section by section. I'll start off with a little bit of background on the commission for those who are less familiar, run through the addendum timeline. We'll get into the management options near the middle of the presentation, and then wrapping up with questions and comments. So for those who are less familiar with the commission, it was formed in 1942 through an interstate compact. It essentially serves as a deliberative body, right? A platform for all the Atlantic Coast states to come together and make joint decisions on how best to manage these coastwide populations. Every Atlantic Coast state is a member of the commission, and each state is represented by three commissioners. A very important piece of legislation passed in 1993, that's the Atlantic Coastal Fisheries Cooperative Management Act, called ECFMA. And what that piece of legislation did is essentially gave the commission regulatory authority in state waters. So prior to 93, with the exception of striped bass, that was a separate act passed in the 80s, FMPs, fishery management plans, approved by the commission. And I keep hearing myself say commission. I'm referring to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. I know you are your own commission here. But when I say commission, I'm referring to AFMSC. Prior to 93, all FMPs were merely recommendations. But since 93, states are now required to implement the regulations approved through interstate FMPs. So every state on the management board for striped bass has a vote in every management decision. The management unit for striped bass is from Maine through North Carolina. And there's also a seat for the Potomac River Fisheries Commission and the District of Columbia. The states come together through quarterly board meetings. And up on the screen are the commissioners for Virginia. These are the guys that sit around the table and hash out issues, fisheries issues, and collectively cast a single vote on behalf of Virginia and all of its stakeholders for every management decision. Quickly with the timeline. So the addendum is obviously out for public comment. The public comment period closes October 7th. There are other ways to submit comment other than attending these hearings. I'll get into those at the end. In October, the management board will come back together and review all the public comment that has been received through these hearings, through email, through mail. They'll select final measures and approve the addendum. And then the anticipated implementation timeline has been January 2020, get new measures on the books for next fishing season. So draft addendum 6 was initiated in response to findings from the 2018 benchmark stock assessment. That document is the latest science on striped bass. And that assessment showed the stock is overfished and is experiencing overfishing. There are management triggers in the management plan that are tied to overfished and overfishing status. So if the stock is determined to be overfished, the management board is required to take action to address overfishing or to address rebuilding the biomass. And similarly with overfishing, if it is determined that the stock is being overfishing is occurring, the Management Board is required to take action to address overfishing. So this draft addendum is focusing only on the overfishing status, addressing overfishing in the short term. Partially, it's a sort of a two-step process. Obviously, the board still needs to deal with rebuilding the biomass, but that can be a very lengthy process. There's a number of other issues that are also on the table that have been raised over the last few years, the reference points themselves, the management triggers, general goals and objectives of the management plan, and really best thing to do is do these all at one time. That can take a long time. So the board is being swift with its action to do a quick addendum that you can do this pretty quickly, address overfishing, get this fishery back on track, basically, and then talk about a more long-term rebuilding plan as soon as this addendum is completed. So think of this as a two-step process. Another theme that you'll see in the draft addendum and tied to options regarding circle hooks is this concept of release mortality from the recreational sector. A large proportion of mortality is coming from catch and release practices on the recreational side, and you'll see that recurring theme as we go through this. Okay, so very quickly, status of the stock. This is a figure of spawning stock biomass we call SSB. And you can see the reference points up on the screen as well. The black line, that is the SSB threshold. It's tied to the 1995 value of SSB. And the dashed line is the SSB target. It's 125% of that value. The take home here is that SSB, peaked in the early 2000s and has sort of been declining since then. The decline is a little steeper in the later part of the time series. That can be attributed to recruitment during the mid-2000s to early 2010. You can see that was a low period of recruitment. That's what the vertical lines are showing you. So you can see also SSB has been below the threshold since about 2013. And again, in 2017, the terminal year, and that's why we say the stock is overfished. This is a figure of fishing mortality. It's tied to those SSB reference points. The solid line, again, is the threshold. So above the threshold, overfishing is occurring. The dashed line is the target. And you can see that F bounces around quite a bit. And over the last 15 years or so, it's been largely above the threshold and is above the threshold in 2017. So a review of the more recent history of the FMP, striped bass are currently managed under Amendment 6 and it's for addenda. Addendum 4 is the most recent addenda. It sort of reset the regulatory program for striped bass. I'm going to pause for questions until we get through the presentation. Hopefully I'll answer some of your questions. So Addendum 4 was implemented in 2015. It's very similar to what this draft addendum is aiming to do, reduce fishing mortality to the target. Regarding federal waters, the exclusive economic zone, it is closed to striped bass fishing. It has been since 1990. NOAA Fisheries has been directed to review that federal moratorium. That directive came in while the benchmark was being developed, and since the benchmark came out with the overfishing, overfished status, that process has sort of halted. Have not heard anything from NOAA regarding any rulemaking with the federal moratorium, but that directive is still out there, so if you do see anything, that's what it stems from. This figure is figure 3 in the document. It's showing you the relative contribution of all the different sectors to total removals or total mortality. This is all in numbers of fish. We have millions of fish on the axis there. And just to orient us a little bit, from the bottom of the figure in the blue, that's commercial harvest. The next red color, that's commercial discards. The green is the recreational harvest, and then the purple is the proportion of the recreational catch that's thrown back that we assume dies. And you can, the take home is that this is predominantly a recreational fishery. In 2017, roughly 7.1 million fish were removed from the population, and 90% of which is attributed to the recreational sector. That total came down in 2018, 5.8 million fish, but still 88% recreational. Now I'm going to zoom in on both the rec and commercial sectors for a few slides. First with the commercial fishery is managed by a quota system. There are two quotas, one for the ocean fishery, which is allocated from Maine through North Carolina along the coast, and then there's a separate quota for Chesapeake Bay. And that quota system has resulted in relatively stable landings since 2003, when Amendment 6 was implemented. And you can see in Addendum 4, there were those harvest reductions that came online, and the quota came down, and so did harvest. This is harvest in millions of pounds on the screen. Roughly 60%, or before I get into that bullet, generally the Chesapeake Bay fishery fully catches its quota. On the ocean, it's a bit of a different story. There are a handful of states that hold on to commercial quota. They've been allocated quota, but they don't have commercial fisheries, which means that that portion of the quota goes unused every year. Also, as of late, fish have not really shown up off of North Carolina, and they also hold a fraction of the quota, which essentially goes unused as well. So the Bay largely utilizes its quota. On the ocean side, there's an underage every year. 60% of harvest is coming from Chesapeake Bay, 80% by number. And that sort of reflects that underage that I was talking to you about. So the quota is divvied up about 50-50, but because some quota is not being used on the ocean side, we have a 60-40 ratio in terms of harvest. And that number is much higher in terms of number of fish because the fish coming from the bay are much smaller, more fish making up that harvest, whereas on the ocean side, there are fewer fish being harvested, but much bigger. Moving to the recreational side, not managed by a quota system, there's no harvest limit for the recreational sector. It's managed through bag limits and size limits, which has allowed effort or catch to fluctuate a bit from year to year with, you know, the availability of fish out there and other social and economic factors that might be at play. And you can sort of see that from this figure. Again, I'm showing you harvest in, this is now in millions of fish, and you can see the variability in those numbers from year to year. Roughly 33% is coming from the Bay, so still a large proportion of harvest is coming from Chesapeake Bay. And that number has increased in recent years since 2015 under Addendum 4, and some of those strong year classes, which should actually go back real quick and just highlight these. I wanted to mention them. And the near the end of the time series, there are three recruitment estimates that sort of stand out. The 2012, 2015, and 2016 estimates were strong recruitment years, strong recruitment events, whereas there had been relatively low recruitment prior to there. And you'll see how those strong year classes sort of show up in the catch. So again, that proportion from the Bay has increased to 45% in recent years, and that is stemming from a lot of small fish showing up in the Bay with those strong year classes. Focusing on the catch and release side of the fishery. So this figure is showing you total recreational catch. So not just the fish that we keep, but also the fish that we throw back. And the red line is the proportion of those fish that are thrown back. And roughly 90% of all the recreational catch is thrown back. And you can see the magnitude of these numbers. Whereas harvest is in millions of fish, this is in tens of millions of fish. fish, just to show you the magnitude of the recreational sector. So it's no surprise, really, that so much of mortality is attributed to catch and release fishing, when we throw back 90% of the fish we catch. This section of the document is reviewing the performance of the fishery from 2015 to 2018 under the Addendum 4 measures. And it's really showing you that because we're using bag limits and size limits, the availability of fish and how many trips anglers are taking can have such a big impact on what our catch is in a given year. And that's what this section is trying to demonstrate, is the changes in effort, changes in the size and the age structure of the population can really impact what our prediction of harvest will be next year or the year down the road. If there's a lot of small fish out there and you're going through a lot of schoolies to get to that one keeper, you know, catch is going to go up. If the fishing's good, you got more people going out there, you're interacting with more fish. If the fishing is not so good, not so hot, maybe there's less fishing going on because of it. Effort goes down, catch goes down. So you can see those two variables can have a very big impact on what your catch ends up being. So the last bullet there is just demonstrating that it can be challenging predicting what your removals are under different management scenarios, particularly for the recreational sector, which is using bag limits and size limits. So this section is reviewing the social and economic factors that should be considered with any management decision. The first bullet there is just highlighting that the two sectors, the commercial and the recreational, will be impacted differently because they have different contributions to the local economy and have different levels of participation. You know, the second bullet is saying, you know, harvest reductions in general, no matter how you're using this resource, you're going to feel the negative impacts. However, the theory is that, you know, we take these cuts now, the stock recovers, it translates into higher catch down the road, and the idea being that those short-term impacts would be offset from these long-term positive gains. This section is highlighting the management program equivalency or conservation equivalency, which is a pretty big part of the fishery management plan for striped bass. It basically allows states flexibility to develop different regulations from the standard in order to address, you know, local or regional differences in how the resources or how the fishery is being executed or how the resources available in those regions. This draft addendum will maintain that flexibility. A lot of states currently use conservation equivalency, and we've tried to summarize those as best we can in the back of the document in Appendix 1. Okay, now we're getting into the management options. First with the projections. So we use a projections model, which is sort of an extension of the stock assessment model, to determine what level of removals will achieve the fishing mortality target, which is 0.20, in 2020 with a 50% probability. So we're trying to reduce fishing mortality to the target. What does that mean in terms of how many fish can we kill, to be blunt? And so the results show that it's an 18% reduction from 2017 levels. We're using 2017 as our reference period because that is the terminal year of the assessment. It's the last full year of data, and that's what our stock status is currently based on, 2017. And we're using a 50% probability to hone in on what that number was. So trying to show you with this figure what it means, 50% probability of achieving F target in terms of projections. What it really means is that we're honing in on the F target. So 50% of the runs, if we ran this model a whole bunch of times, 50% of the runs will be on your F target, and then 50% of the runs will be around your F target. So there's a probability of being below F target, overachieving F target. There's a probability of being slightly above your F target. But what this is showing you, the dotted line is the 95% confidence interval. So we have 95% confidence that if we reduce removals by 18%, we will be within that confidence bound. So about 0.23 to 0.17, all of which are below the fishing mortality threshold. That's the solid black line going through the middle of the figure. Okay, so there's three options in this draft addendum for the recreational and commercial management measures. Option one is status quo. We always see these in our proposed management documents. This essentially is no change in management. The fishery will continue to operate under the provisions of addendum four, which is not designed to achieve an 18% reduction from 2017, and essentially wouldn't meet the requirement that the board is required to address overfishing and within a year. So status quo does not meet that management trigger. Option two is applying the 18% reduction equally or proportionally to both sectors. So the commercial fishery would see an 18% reduction in the quota, and the commercial sector would see an 18% reduction in removals. And there are sub-options for the recreational sector for both the ocean region and the Chesapeake Bay region, so both would apply to Virginia, and I'll go through all of this one by one. So this is the commercial quota that's attached to option two. Again, it's an 18% reduction in quota. Just to orient to the table a little bit, we have the base quota, which is the addendum four quota on the left. In the middle is 2017 harvest for reference, and you can see those states that I was talking about in the ocean region that don't have commercial fisheries. So there's no harvest for those states. And then, except for North Carolina, they do have a commercial fishery, but they just haven't been seeing the fish. And then on the right-hand side, that is what the new quota would be if this option were selected. And I've highlighted Virginia at the top of the table for Chesapeake Bay. That's what the quota is now on the left and would be on the right. And then at the bottom half of the table, again, the current quota on the left and what the new quota would be is on the right. So a big caveat with this. We're talking about reductions in removals and numbers of fish. Here with the commercial sector, it's managed in a quota system based on pounds, and we're reducing the quota. So basically what we're saying here is that if the fishery performs the same as it did in 2017, if those active commercial fisheries harvest the same proportion of their quota in 2020, then we would expect removals to come down 18%, which is it's a reasonable assumption if we saw how the quota came down in 2015 and how harvest also came down to match the quota. However, if Maine and New Hampshire suddenly open up a commercial fishery, if the fish show up off of North Carolina and North Carolina records some harvest, then we probably would expect less than an 18% reduction. So that's the big caveat when we talk about the commercial quota. Okay, moving to for the ocean fishery under option two. These are the sub-options. So all of these are designed to achieve at least an 18% reduction in total removals. We have three different numbers attached to each of these options. We're showing the change in harvest relative to 2017. We're showing the change in releases or release mortality, and we're showing the total removals for each of these options. And basically, these are not designed to address both harvest and release mortality. They're designed to reduce harvest and overall removals. Basically, if we look at option, sub-option one as an example, this is increasing the current minimum size to 35 inches, which means all the fish between 28 inches and 35 inches that you used to be able to keep, you now have to throw back. So you're reducing the number of fish you can bring home, but you're adding to the pile of fish that you're throwing back. That's why you have such a big reduction in harvest, but also an increase in releases or release mortality. And that's how all of these are designed. They're designed to restrict the number of fish you can take home. Therefore, you're increasing the number of fish you're throwing back. But if you do the math, it comes out to about an 18 to 21% reduction overall. So for the next few slides, I'll finish introducing these. So we have one fish at 35 inches, that's the first sub option. And then the next three are all slot limits, so you could only keep a fish within that slot limit. All other sizes would be thrown back. The first sub option is the first slot option is showing a 28-inch lower bound that sort of reflects the current minimum size, right? And the upper bound would be 35 inches to achieve at least an 18% reduction. And then the next two slot options were in the document, they were sort of, we developed them with some guidance from the board. You could shift that slot around quite a bit and achieve your overall reduction in removals. But we picked these ones based on some guidance from the board. They wanted to see, okay, what if we set the upper bound at 40 inches? What would the lower bound look like? It's a 32 to 40 inch slot. Well, what if we had a 30-inch lower bound? What would the upper bound look like? It's a 30 to 38-inch slot. So that's why you see these particular options in the document. Now I'm going to move through the next few slides when we talk about the recreational options pretty quick. They're all designed and developed in the exact same way. If we have any questions about this stuff when I'm done with the presentation, we can certainly circle back. I will add that there are the same seasons that were in place in 2017, those would not change under any of these. It's assuming the same seasons would remain in place. So these are the sub options under option two for Chesapeake Bay. Again, all designed to achieve at least an 18% reduction. 18 inches reflects that sort of historic minimum size. 20 inches, that's reflecting the current minimum size. And then that second sub-option there, that's showing you keeping the same bag limit that's in place and what would the minimum size have to be in order to achieve an 18% reduction in total removals. The bottom two sub-options, those would eliminate the trophy fishery that exists in the bay. So that's the only caveat there. And hopefully, mentioned this, there is a abbreviated version of the draft addendum printed out in the back of the room. It's got all the management options in it, so you can have a quick reference to that. It might be helpful when we get to the questions and comments if you have that in front of you. It also has this decision tree up there. So this is option three. This is the third option. And this under this option, the commercial sector takes a smaller percent cut than the recreational sector. So here the commercial quota is reduced by 1.8%, which means that the recreational sector has to come down 20% in order to make up that difference. Again, we have sub-options for the recreational side for both regions. First, with the commercial quota, everything is the same process was used to develop this. It's a 1.8% reduction from the addendum for quota. Same caveats apply. If the fishery performs the same as it did in 2017, you would expect a 1.8% reduction in numbers of fish. Here's the sub options for the ocean under option three. So now these are all designed to achieve at least a 20% reduction. So you see slight changes in the minimum sizes. The slots are more or less shrunk an inch or two in order to achieve a 20% reduction. And then the sub options for Chesapeake Bay under option three, There's a few more options in here. I'll just talk about the first one briefly. So the first sub option here is a little unique in that it keeps the same size limits that are in place right now. Maryland has 19-inch minimum, and the other three jurisdictions, including Virginia, have a 20-inch minimum. And this reduces the bag limit from two fish to one. And that equates to roughly a 30% reduction overall. You can see that savings you get just by dropping the bag limit from two to one. And there's an additional minimum size limit in this table, whereas the 18% options only had one, I believe. Okay, just a few slides left here. We're getting into the circle hook provision now. So as we were talking about in the beginning of the presentation, that there is such a large component of mortality associated to catch and release practices. And so the board is exploring the mandatory use of circle hooks to address that mortality. So the commission did develop a report back in 2003 on circle hooks, and in that report the commission defines a circle hook as a non-offset hook where the point is pointed perpendicularly back towards the shank, and the term non-offset means the point and the barb are in the same plane as the shank. So we're showing that in this figure here. I think everyone in this room is probably familiar with what a circle hook looks like, but if you're not familiar, that's what these figures are demonstrating. So there are three options associated with the circle hook provision. Option A is status quo, is a recommendation to promote the use of circle hooks. So Amendment 6 back in 2003 does include a recommendation for states to promote the use of circle hooks to its anglers through various platforms, public outreach, education programs, things of that nature. So option A would be status quo, keep it as it is. Option B would be to require states implement regulations requiring the use of circle hooks when fishing with bait to reduce discard mortality in recreational fisheries. Option C would be a bit of a twist on option A. So instead of merely a recommendation, this would require states promote the use of circle hooks. So those are the three options for the circle hook provision. And then this is my last slide, just reviewing the compliance schedule. So the intent has been, you know, whatever measures are approved through this document, they would become effective January 2020. And if, when this is approved, the board is going to have to set dates for everything that I haven't read. This is just sort of a placeholder, sort of an anticipated timeline. So in October, like I was saying, the board will take final action on this document, which means the next board meeting would be in February, and that's the next chance the board will have to review state implementation plans. So if we work backwards from there, state plans would be due in November. That would include any conservation equivalency proposals as well. And then the board would review those in February. So as I was saying, there are other ways to submit comment. The comment period is open until October 7th. You can send me a letter, you can send me an email, you can fax the commission. All this information is in that document that was on the back table there. But that wraps up the presentation. I know I went through that pretty quick. So if there's any questions, happy to take those now, clarifying questions. But I do encourage everyone to hold on to any comments that they have on the addendum. Hold your comments until after the questions. I'm going to record that part of the meeting, make sure I have all your comments correctly on the record. Okay, so questions. I see two hands over here.
One of your earliest charts that you put up may be the same as this black and white handout number figure two. It basically showed where the F fell in relation to the thresholds and the targets, basically since the beginning of time, probably about your fifth or sixth slide.
Go ahead, yep.
That's native. No, not that one. It's the, it looks like it's the equivalent of figure two. Oh, yeah, okay. That indicates that the F target and threshold since the beginning of the fishery was at 2 and 2.5 respectively, right?
Yeah, so the values changed with the last...
Because at one point, yeah, the target...
The values changed with the last benchmark.
I mean, and I may be missing something, but it seems kind of misleading, like it implies that the target and the threshold have been 2 and 2.5 since 1982. But as you know, so a few years back, at one point it was 0.3 and then it was 0.31 for the target, and the threshold was 0.41. So if that was an accurate representation of what the targets and thresholds have been over time, it wouldn't show, that looks like overfishing since the beginning of time, but if you had the real targets and thresholds that had always been there, it would show that that hadn't been taking place.
It's a great point, yes. So with every assessment, we make improvements to the model, we improve the data that's going in it, and we generally see different trends sometimes, but the biggest change with the last benchmark was really the biomass estimate that came out of there. And because the fishing mortality reference points are tied to our biomass reference points, we saw that F really was above the threshold for a number of years. And we, you're right, we didn't know that. Yeah. This wasn't the same picture that we saw with the last assessments. But this is our new understanding of where this population is and where fishing has been through time.
Right. Like back in the, I'll call it the glory days, say 1995, when the stock was declared fully recovered, the and everything was going well, it was held up as the best managed fishery on the East Coast, if not the world. The F was the benchmark, I mean the threshold and the target were markedly different than this, and overfishing wasn't occurring. But according to the way this chart is, shouldn't it reflect how the different targets and thresholds have changed over time? Otherwise,
well, way back when the definition,
and it wasn't that long ago.
Well, the definition for fishing mortality was different back then.
Right.
This definition has not changed since 2015. The values changed with our new benchmark assessment, but the definition has remained the same. If they're tied to this figure, Kelly, let me explain real quick. So you'll also, the SSB values themselves are, you know, almost double what they were at that time you're talking about.
When threshold, you say the values, you mean the amount of the spawning stock?
Yes, the amount. Violence. The amount. Back then, you know, in the early 90s with that assessment, this figure went up to 60,000 metric tons. Now it's saying it went up to over 100,000 metric tons during that time.
Right.
So with that change, and because these reference points are tied to this, we now have a different, we were fishing at a different level than what we knew back then. Times have changed, the data has changed, the model has changed.
Yeah, but
so this is what we're using right now to
base
stock standards.
While we were fishing at higher levels, we continued to have excellent year after year, and I'm, it's not a criticism, just an observation that graph would be misleading. It leads you to believe by looking at that overfishing was occurring in that time, but it clearly wasn't.
Well, I think it matches up pretty well, actually. If you look at the middle of the time series, uh-huh. Fishing mortality is between your target and threshold.
In that middle of the time series, if I recall correctly, the target ranged from 0.3 to 0.31.
Forget those numbers, Kelly.
Okay.
You gotta forget those numbers. These are the new numbers. These are the numbers that we're using. Those old numbers, you can't reference this to those numbers. They're apples and oranges.
I see what you mean, but...
They're apples and oranges.
Well, let me ask you, since the model has changed, it used to be the virtual population analysis, right, that they were using then. Now it's the statistical catch-and-age model. One thing that's concerned me and you guys for a long time is the retrospective bias. In other words, since the beginning of these models, since they left a direct empirical observation type model, the tag-based models, went with the VPA, the virtual population analysis, and now the statistical catch-and-age ever since we went to those computer models, there's been this retrospective bias where the projected mortality, every single run of the model for every single year has been overestimated.
That retrospective bias has really shrunk in the last few iterations of this model.
Well, considering every year for what, 20, 30 years, whatever, that these models have been run, that the mortality has been overestimated, I hear what you're saying, that overestimation has come down to a smaller margin. What is the overestimation then of mortality in the last, say, two or three?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I mean, did we clarify the points that you were making about fishing mortality in this figure? Because if not, I'd like to move on to some. I saw some other
things. Okay, yeah, go ahead. I mean, I've got some other related questions.
Let's try to keep
get other people first.
On the addendum.
That's what I'm on now.
So mine is a question on just the recreational side, and one of the things that always frustrates me is that there's such a high disproportionate of catch totals between states. And particularly Maryland, has like 43% of the take of all the states, whereas Virginia, we're like less than 4%. When Maryland has an open season from April through December with no flow season, Virginia has a tiny spring season, which very few participate in, and a fall season that really doesn't get going until December, so our fall season is kind of short. So I'm looking at our cuts, you know, so we're going to apply an 18% cut equally among the states. And so you're talking about cutting Maryland 18% of their 43% take, and Maryland and Virginia gets 18% of our little paltry 3.7% of the take. I guess my question then becomes, is there any discussion at the commission to somehow rein in Maryland and get them more, I know we don't have quotas, but a more fair catch totals amongst them or the other states? Are we just going to say they just get 18% of what they're doing now?
That's a good question. With this document in particular, and with the management plan for striped bass, when we sit around the table, we're talking about coast-wide reductions. We're not pinpointing one state. At least that's what the discussion is supposed to be focused on. This reduction, 18% reduction, is a coast-wide reduction in removals, not a regional.
Or yeah, not one state has they get to fish all year, and we get to fish little tiny seasons. Why is that?
Well, I understand that there's regional differences in the fish that show up.
We're talking about the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about really reef. We're talking about the Chesapeake Bay.
And I will note that these recreational options for the bay are supposed to be implemented on a coast-wide, on a bay-wide scale. So not Virginia only or Maryland only.
You're talking about 18% of 43%.
Are supposed to implement. That's how these are designed to work.
So you get a salami point, basically. You're not going to try to get Maryland back into some reasonable catches.
I am not a manager.
No, that was my
I'm
question.
Just trying to clarify.
That's my question, though. There's no discussion at the commission other than salami flies.
Well, no, this just sounds like comment that you want to provide, and I would love to take that comment when we get to the public comment.
Well, that is a comment, but that my first was a question. There's no discussions on the commission level.
This
addendum
is proposing options to reduce overall removals.
Okay.
I do have a question. Merlin, over the last 3 years, according to not this, but stuff from ASMC, has averaged like 2 million fish mortality a year. You still credit them with a 9% discard mortality. When I was at ASMC, there was a study done in Susquehanna Flat that showed mortality was close to 100%. Most of the fish in Maryland have been caught up that way. Why are you only saying 9%?
The science
says it's way more than 9%.
It ties back to that coast-wide approach, right? So we're talking about, in this calculation, in terms of the model, we're assuming 9% of all the fish from Maine through North Carolina, including the inland systems, 9% of all those fish are thrown back.
Well, you have one state.
There are a lot of studies. This number comes from an average across a number of different studies across the coast that are looking at different environmental factors, where that fish was caught, what was the water temp, what was the air temp, what was the salinity, looking at the survivability of those fish, using different baits, artificial, cut, live, looking at different hooks, circle hooks, J hooks, treble hooks. And across all those regions, we take an average of 9%. So I think the more direct answer is, while it may be higher in certain regions, it's also lower in other regions. And so we take an average across all of them.
It can't be low enough in other regions to make up for the fact that it's close to 100% in Maryland. And one thing to clarify for you, because you've alluded to this several times, and evidently you're not aware of things on this. North Carolina, when it established the coastal quota, it was based on 75 to 79. DEZ was open. A lot of North Carolina's quota, we were in a diminished fishery. The stock was not collapsed yet, but it was in the process of collapsing from 75 to 79. So you had very large fish. They were concentrated in the summer in New England and in the winter in North Carolina. The only time they entered the bay was the spawn. So they were in the bay for a very short period of time. Maryland had a 32-inch, well, 15 pounds at first, then they changed it to 32-inch maximum. North Carolina's quota has not been caught, because North Carolina several years ago passed a regulation, because the trawlers were still catching it up until then. They were working outside of 3 miles and towing to inside the 3 mile limit before they hauled back, which was perfectly legal, even though it wasn't a good idea. And then they were high grading, and they got videotaped on the phone naturally, and it was a big stink over it, and it should have been. But when you're saying they're not off North Carolina, the fish are still off North Carolina. They're probably the most abundant they've been probably in my lifetime off North Carolina. But during the AZ, when they do the winter trawl survey, they pick up a lot of them in the AZ. So the fish are there, they're just not inside of 3 miles. So when you're saying they're not off North Carolina, they are. The rules has changed. You can't go outside of 3 miles anymore, and the quota was based on that fishery.
I appreciate the clarification. They're not available to those fishers within 3 miles. Yes.
One, I get option one status quo, option two, you just split 18%, 18%. Where did the numbers for option three come from?
So that's a good question. The 1.8 is, so remember in 2017, 90%. Of the removals came from the recreational side, meaning 10% came from the commercial side. So to develop this option, we multiplied the total reductions needed, 18% times 10%, the proportion coming from the commercial sector, and came up with a 1.8% reduction. A little bit more background, you know, there was a lot of discussion at the board meeting when this addendum was initiated, where they were talking about including a suite of options where the commercial sector takes less of a cut. And they didn't really provide, the board didn't really provide much more guidance than that. And we just want to see a suite of options where both sectors take the same cut, and a suite of options where the commercial sector takes a smaller cut. And so the team that put this together, the Striped Bass Plan Development Team, came up with a 1.8%, trying to keep it tied to the proportions of harvest going on in 2017 with the actual reductions that are needed. That's where that 1.8 comes from. Yes, sir.
How do you measure the stock when the fish up and down in Antico that you feel like you're so on top of? You have some eyes that I don't, or some way you can follow the fish and tell how many live down that big ocean?
We do our best to use a statistical model that pulls data from people out on the water, pulls data from catch data. It's also using what we call fishery-independent data sources. So BMRC has a handful of surveys where they survey the same point of the bay year after year, develop some trend indices from that. That data goes into the model. We have similar surveys up and down the coast. So we're collecting a lot of data from a lot of different sources, from a lot of different regions, and plugging it into a statistical model. It works very similar to an economic model to calculate how many fish are out there.
All right, my second question is this. Has the index of the juvenile fish has been in the last couple of years? Has it been low or high?
That's a good question. I don't know off the top of my head.
The juvenile?
Yeah.
I think 2018 is about average, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was slightly above average in 2018.
It's been up and down. There's some really high ones.
Yeah.
Some fairly high ones.
They've had some really 40-year classes. Yeah.
On average, though, it's been above average. Like if you look at the 2011, the 2014,
that's
the
overall.
2002.
Yeah, this is overall, but it's but the Bay indices really drive these estimates. So this isn't specific to Virginia's waters, but
Maryland.
If you look
is
at
the
2012,
index,
right? No, it's a combination.
2015 and 2016. Those are estimates of age one fish. So they reflect the fish that were born the year before. So in 2012, if you have a high recruitment estimate, that reflects your 2011 year class.
I understand all of that, but I'm just asking you because I don't think you all know. There's more little fish now of two different year classes in the Bay than I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, so
they had to be 16,
2014 and 2015. Fish born in 2014.
So if the stock is so healthy to produce that many juvenile fish, why cry wolf?
Yeah.
Well, huh? Why? No, I'm serious.
I understand, sir.
Yeah.
We don't really have a great grip on why, if we have this many spawners out there, why does it produce this level of spawn of recruits? There really isn't a good tie there. It seems to be very environmentally driven.
Yeah.
So if you can have as big of a spawning stock as you want, really, but if you have bad environmental conditions that year, you're not going to get the fish. And that's, you know, we had some high biomass in some of these years, but really low recruitment estimates. And that means that there isn't really a good correlation.
A high biomass like that will sustain the fish for 3 years or more.
Yeah, you can even have low biomass and have a great spawn of year. It's driven almost totally environmentally, like Matt says.
So, I mean, these things may look good for y'all on the graph up there, but I'm living reality. You know, we crab as well as we fish. And normal year, we catch 5 or 6 small rock a day. And this year, we've caught 25 or 30 in the same amount of pots.
Yep. And we have this stuff, and we are here to collect your feedback as well. That's literally what I'm here to do, is get your comments to share that with the board. And I've already heard a number of comments already that are not on my recorder, and they're not going to make it into my summary. So if we could focus on questions, if there's, yes, questions?
Yeah. I'm still confused about this mortality rate.
Okay.
18%, if I remember, is with fresh water or warm temperature.
15 is a
good year. Right? So isn't it the worst case scenario that you land on it is in the work is putting the highest value of it on it?
So the 18% is the target reductions that we're trying to get.
So that's the worst scenario, and then the best scenario is?
No, that's just a flat rate that we use.
Right.
For all
I guess it's just y'all's data, right?
Well, no, this comes from regional studies that are done by academics or other scientific bodies.
And then is there ever a fear that if you're trying to get a smaller fish that you're going to kill more trying to get the bigger fish for the recreational size guys?
Yeah, yep. I thank you for bringing that up again. So, I mean, that's what these options are trying to show you in these tables. So we have an overall 18% reduction with that first sub-option. It's raising the minimum size, right? And so if you're raising the minimum size, now there's all these fish that you used to be able to keep that you're not throwing back. And that 3% increase in release mortality, I mean, it looks like a small number, 3%, but that's, remember, the releases are an order of magnitude larger than the harvest. So we're throwing back tens of millions of fish and keeping only a couple million.
So that 3% represents a very large number, and we're accounting for that as best we can. You know, it's very difficult to predict what the catch is going to be. We don't know how many fish are going to show up, exactly how many fish are going to show up in, you know, on a given Sunday in Chesapeake Bay, and what kind of luck these anglers are going to get. But we do the best we can with the calculations, and we're accounting for that, those fish that are thrown back.
And then the numbers of the recreational catch just seems absolutely, I don't know where, how do you gauge that? I mean, I've been fishing a long time, and a lot of people don't ask the question, how many you caught?
Yeah.
Validity, or is it, and it looks like.
This data all comes from MRIP. MRIP is the Marine Recreational Information Program. It's a program managed by NOAA Fisheries. They have intercepts all up and down the coast in every state at, you know, big choke points, marinas, popular docks, and intercept, you know, they actually go up to anglers and ask.
Oh, yeah.
And that's so that data, there's also an effort part of that survey where they by mail, and that was a big change that happened in 2018. They send mail to, I think, every registered angler, and hopefully they get some responses where they ask how many times did you go out there and what did you catch and all that kind of stuff. And so they pull that all together, they extrapolate it to the entire coast, and that's where these numbers come from. MRIP is basically the largest consistent coast-wide survey of recreational catch and effort data that we have. Yes.
Speaking to MRIP, I'm glad you brought that up. And I've been following this development. Represent Virginia on the Atlantic Coastal Cooperative Statistics Program since '98. So the previous models to estimate the recreational fishery, we were following them, and I kind of became inactive in recent years as MRIP was developed. But it is probably the premier worldwide catch of recreational effort. It's got all sorts of statistically valid ways that they're doing it. But without going in and praising MRIP, in the document on page 2, and this is different than what you handed out, the summary that you handed out there, and it's slightly different than the public comment document that they had up at the last ASMFC meeting, right? I guess you altered it after the board made some small alterations. So what I presume is the current one that I downloaded off the internet. On page 2, speaking about MRIP, it mentions that the new MRIP removal estimates are on average 2.3 times higher than the recreational removals that were used in previous stock assessments. That's a quote off of this. And so my question to you, sort of a two-part question, basically, if you could elaborate on what the significance of the recreational removals being 2.3 times what they were previously estimated to be on, you know, everything from the spawning stock biomass to the just the stock in general. But this last part of that sentence I didn't understand. You need to explain it if you don't mind. It says that because of that 2.3 times higher, that it's resulting in higher estimates of female spawning stock biomass and therefore higher estimates for the SSV reference points. That's where I must be missing something. If the recreational removals with this new model were on average 2.3 times higher than previously, I don't understand how that results in a higher estimate of female spawning stock biomass or why higher estimates for the SSB reference points.
So I was trying to get into that with your last few questions. And so basically what happened, I mean, this is a retrospective look at once we put these new numbers into the model, what happened is we saw the have catch was much higher than we previously thought.
Back casting, going back.
All the numbers increased roughly 2 to 3 times.
So you ran past years through the MRIP to see what the actual
was. Yes. So MRIP did this. Yeah. We didn't do it.
Right. No,
MRIP recalibrated the entire time series.
Okay.
For every fish.
Gotcha.
And those estimates were on average 2 to 3 times higher every year.
So
average.
The spawning stock biomass, for
must
example,
have been much bigger
higher.
In order to produce that type of catch.
What magnitude of was
I believe with the last assessment, our threshold, and that gets to your second question.
Yeah.
The threshold is by definition the 1995 estimate of SSB.
The year was fully recovered.
So if SSB shot up, the 1995 value shot up, and now we have a higher reference point.
So how much higher then right now is the SSB than what we thought it was before this run of the MRIP?
I don't have a figure to put up side by side, but I think the threshold was around 60, and now it's around 91.
Mm-hmm.
So again, apples to oranges. We can't compare this new model and with this new data to some model that was different and data that was different.
Right.
This is sort of our new understanding of where the stock was.
But you have been able to use this new MRIP model, and this isn't a criticism, I'm just trying to understand that you have been able to use this new MRIP model, though, and run through it all the past fisheries, and thereby determine that the spawning stock biomass was apparently much higher in those years, in past years. At least that's what it says in the document. Yeah. That's where I don't understand. It's kind
of, I think I'm getting a little confused by your question too. I mean, the entire figure, the values changed.
Right.
You still see the same trend.
Right. And if the values changed, in my opinion, or at least my mind, it seems they changed for the better. If the spawning stock biomass was higher than anyone thought upon running the MRIP model, which I guess was based on 2.3 times recreational effort than was previously calculated, how would that relate to the targets and thresholds we're trying to hit if the SSB was that much higher?
Because the definition of the threshold is not that number that was there before.
Right.
It is measured as the SSB in 1995.
Okay.
With these new numbers, it's much higher.
Right.
So it, you know, you can't, as you said, you can't look at the old number of 60,000 metric tons.
Sure.
So it's, you know, And he's right in that regard. It's like, you know, they recalibrated this all, and they're doing this with all species.
So our targets that we're trying to hit are much higher and more difficult than what we were presuming with previously.
Well, it's all relative. It's all relative.
Okay. The relativity part's a good explanation. Yeah.
It's a calibration. So that when you do a calibration, you're going to have a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't compare. You know, you, and they looked at all the data and they recalibrated it. So this is all the old data back from 1982 to the present is now in this new format.
But there's a lot of things going on too. There's improvements to the model itself.
Of course.
So, you know, it's not a one-to-one type change.
Sure.
You know, the magnitude of the numbers changed. Its general trend did not change. But if you saw in those older figures, we were actually above the target for a number of years in those old figures, under those old assessments.
Right.
Now it looks like we've just scratched the target for a year or two and then came back down. So you just need to sort of wipe your mind.
I've got other questions I'll ask another time after this hearing. We'll probably be calling you up at the office. One thing, a question got back there asked, if you could sort of elaborate on why there's a 1.8% option 3, where the commercial just takes the 1.8% cut instead of the 18% cut. Would you mind explaining so that some of the recreational fishermen understand that these increases in F, or the overfishing that's been taking place, has not been within the commercial sector? My understanding is that we've had a consistent underage, which, you know, a number of fish that are, I don't think we've ever had an overage. If we did, of course, it was paid back immediately. That seems to have, given a buffer, I would think, to any overfishing that took place in the recreational, you know, fish that were allocated but weren't caught. Is the fact that the commercial hasn't had any impact on these overages and F, or exceedances of the target, or in this case, the threshold, is that one reason that we have that one option to consider only a 1.8% cut, considering the commercial sector hasn't been responsible?
I'm not going to comment on how it translates to mortality. I will only show you this figure, which hopefully demonstrates what you're trying to get at, is that majority of removals are coming from the recreational sector.
Right.
And that's plain and simple with this figure.
Was that not in excess, though, of what their allocated F, or I say quota, but they're obviously not based on quota.
Allocation.
Pardon?
There is no allocation.
There is no recreational allocation.
The predicted then amount or level of removals by the recreational was obviously exceeded. Is it that the main source of the excess mortality that's causing you all to do this addendum? And I'm not complaining about that. It just seems was it were the commercial fisheries as responsible as the recreational fisheries?
Hey, everyone is out there catching fish. So from my chair, everyone is part of this.
Well,
based on the overall renewables, commercial is 10% of the overall renewables.
Yeah, right. But again,
that's what you get at 1.8%.
Right, and that's just a relative absolute number. But the commercial is allocated a certain quota, which is calculated to stay within the F. The recreational, while it's a totally different model and it's not a quota allocation, the management plans are supposed to be calculated to keep them within the F. The commercial fisheries stayed within their mortality rates that they were allowed in, I believe, every case. But the recreational fisheries...
So, again, these are the quotas, reductions, all that stuff that happened in 2015.
Right.
That was all to achieve a certain desired level of removals.
Did both sectors achieve the desired level?
In that first year, they sure did. Uh-huh. Overall, across the coast, which is what these measures are aiming to do, a
right.
coast-wide reduction, they hit it spot on.
The first year,
as you go further out,
right.
and the demographic of the population changes, and people behave differently, they
sure.
respond differently to the regulations, you start to see a shift.
Right.
And
what was that?
Catch went up, catch went down. I mean, it happened year to year under the same measures. The quota that's in place for the commercial sector has kept things relatively stable for the commercial side. But we're using bag limits and size limits to manage the recreational fishery, and so there's a little more volatility on that side. The point, let's cut to the chase here.
Yeah.
90% of removals have been from the recreational sector, right?
Right.
So let's, you know.
And that was my understanding, is that was more than was predicted according to the models that they're managed within than it should have been.
The models, the regulations that were created back in 2015 achieved exactly what they tried to do within that first year, what they tried to do.
Right.
Yes.
But subsequent years, it's my understanding that while the commercial, as you just mentioned, has been stable and has been fishing
correct.
Under their quota.
Correct.
But that was not the case with the recreational fishery. And I'm not criticizing them. I'm in favor of a robust recreational fishery. But I just wanted the one person, because there's a lot of people that don't understand why there's the option of the 1.8% reduction for commercial as opposed to 18%. And I think that one reason that's there is because the commercial haven't contributed to the excess mortality that was allocated or that was predicted or aimed for under Addendum 4 or previous addendums.
We understand. That sounds about right.
Okay. I think everyone understands that, yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure that's...
I don't know anything about it, but that's exactly right.
Okay, I just want to make sure that was...
Everything I've read about a rebuilding stock shows, whether it's deer or fish or whatever, shows that as it's rebuilt, it peaks, then it levels off to a carrying capacity. Are you sure that we could set as our goal what the peak was in 1995? Are we stretching it to think that we could grow that again and keep it and maintain it?
And this management program is in a single species context. It doesn't talk about the other, ecosystem things going on, predator-prey relationships, changing environment, things like that. That is definitely the future of fishery management in the U.S., but right now this is a single species management program.
But it's assumed that we could reach that peak again and maintain it.
Yep.
Okay. All right, just one minute.
All right, I think we can move into the comment part here, right? So I'm going to open up my computer. So we can do this in a couple different ways.
Are we going to table comment from the audience? Or are we going to have to go?
Yeah, I think we're going to move the table closer.
I can do the table.
He has a recording device, so still capture all your comments.
Hmm?
I was just explaining that we're going to move the table closer so
yes.
that the comments are not
I think we'll be okay with this. Okay, so there's a couple ways we can do this, and why don't I just... So we can go through the options with like a show of hands. And if we take a show of hands on each option and then look for someone to provide, you know, a reason as to why they selected that option and see if there's general consensus on why we're selecting an option, and then move on to the sub-options, you know, if there's anyone in favor of a particular sub-option, raise your hand. You can take that kind of route, or we can just... You know, raise your hand, I'll call on you, and just spill your guts, if you will, on this addendum. We can go that route if you prefer.
We're actually going to be able to get public comment, not just raise our hands on options, right?
What's that?
We're actually going to be able to get public comment, not just raise our hands on options.
Yes. Didn't really go so well at some of the other hearings where, you know, people are just kind of sitting there. So it looks like some people are prepared to give comment here, which is great. So if we want to go the second route, that's no problem.
So you either address something and particularly want to talk about, or we go through each option and then we go to that option, you would say whether, you know, you would give your comment then, and then we'll see who's in favor and who's against that one.
Comment that we go along instead of having comments at the end.
For example, I will say,
yeah.
Option one, who's in favor of status quo? And anyone who wants to be in favor of status quo can raise their hand, and then I can say, does anyone want to speak
people
about
put them
that?
Up, though, aren't
you? Yeah, this is going to be tough.
I'll do that.
Did anyone hand them out to you?
Yes, I did.
All right, flip it open.
That's a lot of stuff.
But it's... Do you want to go the other route, though? I feel like it might be better.
However you want to do it.
I'm getting a vibe that...
I would suggest we do the hand-raising with the options first, and then the comments second. Or do the comments first, and then the hand-raising second, rather than trying to mix everything.
I might have just confused everybody. I apologize for that.
Just open it up for comments. We'll have general comments. And then we'll just vote on the options.
Okay.
Great hands on
the option. Let's do it. All right. Option one. Any folks in this room in favor of option one?
Okay. Status quo.
Yes.
No.
Put your hands up. One.
Can you do more than one?
Yes. Would anyone like to speak to why they prefer option one?
I'll speak to it.
All right.
And I will say I was AFMC for years as legislator possibly for Delegate Morgan and Senator Chichester and Senator Lewis and stuff. So I was there when we developed Apple. And when we developed our Apples, it was perfect. It was the best you could do. And now we have oranges. As you alluded to, apples and oranges on the stuff. You know, if the scientific community let something be overfished for 15 years, they need to be replaced. You know, you've changed the goalposts. We're down to the 1 yard line, and all of a sudden you've taken the goalposts and you moved them 50 yards back further. So you're trying to run them down. That's changed. And another thing that's changed is the recreational fishing survey. It showed when we got the new number, when it left MRAS and went to the new one, it shows a gigantic increase in fishing. Never happened. You know, I see less people fishing now than I've ever seen in my life. And it's the same reason on the recreational side as the commercial side. Young people are not getting involved. It's mostly older people. So
you know, we have the perfect storm. We have the numbers have been, you want the threshold moved way up or way down, whichever way you say it goes, from 3-1 to 2. It's going to look like you overfished because you were fishing on the definition that was there at the time and you were underneath of it. And if we would put that up there right now, the old numbers, it wouldn't be overfished. And when you look at the graph that you had up, you can see when you have big years of recruitment, which we had in 15 and 16, it takes a few years, up to 8, sometimes 5. Some of them recruited as early as 4 or 5 years. You'll have a big bump in the spawning stock because those fish will recruit into it. You're not taking that into consideration. You had 2 very good year classes. And if you look at that chart, everywhere before when you had good year classes down the road, it showed the spawning stock going up. So it would happen. A couple reasons I'd say on the commercial side on the status quo. We had a bay-wide system, a bay-wide quota. That was changed a few years back. Drastically reduced the bay quota. So a lot of the commercial fishermen really suffered underneath of it. And ours is a firm quota. You know, it's not, nobody achieved on the recreational side a 25% reduction. Merlin went up a couple 100%. Some of the other states did. For example, Massachusetts killed 700 and some thousand discard, and they're spawning stock fish that they're discarding. It would take us 120 some years of our coastal quota to catch that many fish. I'm not going to be around to get my part. 20 years would be asking a lot. So Virginia is a very small player. All of a sudden their fishery didn't increase 125 or 30% recreational wise. The numbers changed because of the new system. And that's all it is. It's not been an increase. This is all paper. And like I said, apples and oranges, like you alluded to, yeah, you changed the apples and the oranges. It's not like they did it themselves. And that's the reason I say fat as well. And, you know, it's just there's no need to do anything on the commercial side. They've never done, they had nothing to do with it. We dropped from 15% to 8. So we've already dropped significantly. The only state that had any increase into the commercial at all was New Jersey. And New Jersey takes thirst and gives it to the recreational side for a bonus fishery, which I don't even think should be allowed. So there was no increase whatsoever. The 1.8%, there was no increase in the commercial. The commercial actually went down 25%. There was no state, the first year, they achieved a reduction on the recreational fisheries. And after that, it's been through the ceiling. So I really don't see any need in doing anything. It's not desperate. The numbers are not dropping. It's been overfished for 15 years. The graph that you put up there starting in 84 would be transposed because we'd be in a state of collapse. If that fishery had been overfished severely for 15 years, we'd be in a state of collapse right now. So it's just the fact that you change the numbers. That's the only thing.
Okay. I want to change my vote. I just want to vote 5-1. I didn't vote before for it. But I agree with Ernie. I think it's for all the reasons that he gave, I think we need to keep things going like they're going.
But you're saying no change for the comms and the recs right. When you vote for option 1, right? So you're saying no change for comms. When you say that option,
I'm saying no. On option 1 status quo, don't change anything. It's really no
change.
The only thing
you
really need to address is the hook and release mortality. That needs to be addressed because it's a waste of a fishery, no matter what fish it is. I don't care if it's bull minnows. We don't need to be killing them needlessly. We need to try to address it.
Anyone else who's spoken that raised their hand in favor of option 1 want to add to gentleman's comments.
Mm-hmm. I'm representing, speaking for the Virginia Watermen Association. This has come about so fast, this doesn't represent every single waterman or even every single member, but about half of our guys think that status quo, for all the reasons Ernie mentioned and many more, is what should be. There are others that think, even though the commercial is not responsible for any of these overages, that they're willing to look at a 1.8% reduction. 18% is just ridiculous, because we've been proactive and well-managed for many years. Just for example, in recent history, in 2012, the Bay jurisdictions took a 14% reduction proactively, expecting that we would get credit later, and what credit we got was minimal. We've never gotten any credit for things we did proactively. Now, of course, we complied fully with Addendum 4 passed in 2014 in Connecticut, and once again, we've been within even the reduced quotas, well below. We always have an underage, and those cumulative underages never catching our quota, which is characteristic of most of the commercial fisheries, reflects a stringent, well-regulated commercial fishery, and it also, all those fish that were allocated but not caught also represent a buffer for the inability of whoever to manage the recreational fisheries. So there are probably a half or more of the Virginia Watermen's Association that do think that nothing should be required. Others think that maybe 1.8% would be appropriate, just because we do want to do our part, or even when it's not, we don't have responsibility for that, but a 1.8% cut is far more palatable than an 18% cut, although neither one are deserved. Should we sort of think that the various sectors that are responsible for the overages in F should be the ones that have to comply with new benchmarks or new standards. So, like Ernie said, those standards and those benchmarks have changed. The goalposts and the goal line have been markedly altered over time. And I would mention that as far as Virginia's commercial fishery, there was a time that so much effort had transferred out of the bay into the ocean that our average size fish had gone up. Well, ASMFC, of course, and we agreed, concluded that too much effort was being put on older fish, the spawning stock biomass, and at great pain over a very few years, we transferred our effort back into the bay and brought the average size fish down markedly, down to what the ASMFC wanted us to do. So we just think that at every level, since the fisheries opened in 1990, I think there may have been one year there was a tiny overage, 1996 maybe, that was paid back immediately the next year, yet never has any recreational excess mortality been paid back or even requested to be paid back. So considering since the beginning of time, the commercial fishery in Virginia has been in compliance and has continuous underages, we really think that that status quo, or certainly no more than a 1.8% reduction, is the most that would be at all palatable. It just would otherwise it's no good.
Yeah, let somebody else speak. Be here all night. You do make very good points, but repeating here, a lot of come a long way. I'm Doug Jenkins, and I represent Twin River Waterman Association. Chesapeake Bay states are punished and have a much more conservative quota than the northern states, and just because of our area as a big producer of Striker bass. In other words, we spawn them, raise them, protect them, and they feed heavily on our crab industry, and they grow up and migrate to the northern states to be caught. That's a fact. ASMFC acts more like a dictatorship by not allocating a fair share to us. In 2012, recreational landings were as follows. New York, 28%, Massachusetts, 24%, Maryland, 17%, New Jersey, 10%, and Virginia, 8.7%. recreation fishing harvests 90% of the gray bass on the Atlantic coast and the commercial harvest 10. And of that 10%, you've taken half of that away. In your charter, social and economical impact must be taken into account. You have violated your charter. Virginia Waterman had lost $11,892,000 in revenue since you started cutting our fishing. That's a lot of money for hardworking watermen. States have a right to make allocations to the user group, but they must be fair and equitable and shall not discriminate one against the other in their fishery management plans. Virginia has failed to do this. In that plan, and ASMFC has failed also. Virginia has never put a limit on the number of recreational fishing and license sales. They have no idea how many fish they catch each year. By my last count, there were 257,000 recreational fishing here in Virginia. At one time we had a quota, and they took the quota away from the recreational and they left it with the commercial. According to the Virginia Code, that is not right. We're supposed to be treated equal. Kelly quoted that code a while ago. I had it somewhere else.
2203.
That's right.
But that's Virginia's code.
That's Virginia's code, but Virginia hadn't really stood up to the Virginians. If we did, we would have been withdrawn from the ASMSE years ago. Commercial people work on a tagging plan, so they have a good idea how many feet were caught, not only by the number of feet, but by the pounds. I've been concerned over the years about the damage the rockfish are doing to our blue crab fishery. They are eating millions of small crabs every year, and the more rock we have in the bay, the more crabs they're going to eat. When we had a healthy rock fishing back in the 1960s and 1970s, the size limit on rockfish was 14 inches. You could catch as many as you want, recreational and commercial. We had good fishing years on up through to in the mid-1970s, and we had good crab harvests. Since the rockfish has been left in the bay for 2-3 extra years to grow out and return to the coast, it has hurt our crab industry. And they put a lot of regulations on there. Why should we sacrifice Virginia, a valuable, healthy crab fishery, to the northern states? That's what we do. It's disturbing because it's not abiding by the charter that the ASMFC set forth. And under that charter, it states very clearly about the social and economical impact they may have on a community or other user groups. I wrote a letter to the Secretary of Natural Resources asking for a round table discussion about our crab fishery and striped bass policy, which they have failed to address. I requested that both BMRC and BIM's representative to be included so we could discuss facts. I received a letter thanking me for my many years of service on different advisory boards, but VMRC and VIMS didn't think a meeting was necessary. And the reason they didn't think it was necessary because they didn't want to hear the facts. Facts rate a little higher on scales and opinions. The bottom line is VMRC and VIMS have failed to represent the Virginia Waterman fairly and equitably. And ASRC has not abided by its charter regarding the social and economical benefits to Virginia Waterman under the fish management plan. The last time you cut our quota, you promised you would give it back within 3 years. We never got it back. Now you are asking for another cut. I was in Maine in July this summer and fished with a recreational guide for striped bass with live bait. We caught fish all day long. The size limit on that was 28 inches and up, and we kept those. That season is from May to October, much longer than Virginia. Is that fair? Do you all answer any questions if you get a answer? Do you think that's fair for Maine to catch more fish in Virginia when we grow them and produce them and raise them? If I was a recreational fisherman here, which I am, it disturbs me just as bad as it does because I'm a commercial. But we're getting a share. You be sure underline that share. And we've been getting it since get go. Thanks.
Can I ask a question?
You ask me?
No. Mike, you're a commercial. My question or point of information is commercial discards. What's a commercial discard?
I never heard of one before.
That's my question. I mean, what possible, unless they overfished and knew it and threw a couple back?
Striped bass are caught in either the striper fishery or other fisheries that are thrown back.
But that, why would a commercial
fed fish?
Size limits.
Size limits. Caught the quota already. Things like that.
Size limits, they throw a dead one back and then tag a bigger
one?
No.
It's fish that are thrown back that we assume die based on, again, studies of discard mortality rates from different gear types.
Right. I guess my question is, why would they discard a fish?
For regulatory reasons or for seasons, out of season, things like that.
Like if they're fishing for a different species, you call it rock fish and throw it back?
And aren't allowed to keep it because they don't have a permit for it.
They do
not.
But they ran out of time.
Or they ran out of tags. Or the season's closed and they're not allowed to land a striped bass during that season.
Gotcha. Okay.
Got a little bit off track there. Anyone wanted to comment on the option one before I close the door on option one? Okay. Those that are in favor of option two. Anyone around the room in favor of option two?
So you're just saying generally option two, you're not going to go through the sub-options?
Let's start with I'm in favor of option two, and then we'll move through.
You're going to go through the sub-options?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're talking about between option two and three, which one do we favor is what you're asking?
Yes.
Okay, two.
Okay, so...
Are we raising our hands now for option
yes,
two?
Yes, for option two. So I will, this gentleman over here, you want to speak to which options, sub-options under option two and why you chose option two?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm Mike Avery. I'm with the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association, so we represent the recreational angler and the charter captains, which abide by the recreational limits. But I'm not ready to give comments from my association yet, because we have till 4 October, and I've got to get this through my board. So I'm really just speaking to Mike Avery, my comments. And so, you know, we have a poll running on our website, and so far we have over 500 responses. And our anglers are telling us that they're conservation-minded, and they're willing to take some cuts to help rebuild the stock. And so our anglers want to do that, and we know we're responsible for the fish decline, and we want to make changes. We do have some... Our problem we have now is our anglers are really split over the different sub-options. And so we still have until the 18th of September for them to finish selecting which options they want. And so that's part of our problem now, and that's true for a lot of the recreational anglers, is to get three recreational anglers in the room, you're going to get three different opinions on how to do something. And so we're still struggling with that one. But a comment that we have goes to my question earlier, is that when we have the cuts throughout the different states, we would prefer to see the cuts not be so salami sliced and the cuts applied so evenly when so many states have so many different seasons. Like Maryland fishes pretty much all year long, and other states have mentioned they have much longer seasons. And so Virginia is already on the conservation side of the striped bass fishing with very short seasons. And so consequently, we're not responsible for a large take of the coastwide take in Virginia. And so the salami slice, our little 3-point-something% we catch in Virginia for the recreational side, and Maryland has 43%, and the other states are in, you know, teens and 20s, to salami slice that is really not a fair approach. We'd rather see bringing the state some way, and I know we don't have a quota, so I don't know how you do that, but there's got to be a way to tell the other states that, hey, you got to have a limited season out there. You can't fish all year long for them, because if you salami slice, you know, all the states evenly, you know, you're going to take, Maryland's only going to take, they're going to take 18% or 43%, so they're still taking a lot of fish every year. They still get to fish for them all year long. So that's my one comment. We do have some leading pole contenders, and I can talk about that now. Out of the option 2A, we like 2A.
Before I'm going to cut you off, you wanted to not talk about your associations. You want to speak accord.
I can tell you. Yeah, I don't want to tell you. I don't want to say this is my association's opinion. I'm just going to tell you who the leading pole entries are. So that's Mike Avery's. If you don't want me to do that, I won't do that either.
I'm just trying to make sure I capture this correctly.
No, right. So, I mean, my problem is I'm just one board member. And our poll hasn't closed, and our board hasn't decided on what we specifically would talk to be like.
That's what I wrote.
Yeah.
So,
but I can raise my hand as Mike Avery and say which one we support.
Absolutely.
At the moment. So Mike Avery supports option 2A2 and 2B2.
Thank you. Others want to speak to option 2?
I don't know. I mean, since I came to the meeting, I guess my problem is the record. I think it should be split 18%, 18%, but I'm hearing the commercial people, and I'm more inclined maybe that shouldn't be it. But then option 3 really goes, just that's an absurd length, a different direction from 18% to 1.8% commercial. So that's why my question was, where did they come up with option 3? The discussions about the mortality rate, the commercial people mortality rate's a lot less, I think is really disingenuous since they don't release fish like we have to release. But listening to their arguments, I think that I agree with them that Virginia's getting a shame. And that's the real problem. Not how we divide the fish between commercial and rec, but the fact that Virginia gets the shay up and the other states are overfishing.
Anyone else want to speak to option 2? I had to.
One observation on both option 2 and option 3, these slot limits are so narrow. There's actually one 3B6, or I believe 3B5 rather, that's a slot limit of 20 to 23 inches. Whether you've got a slot as small as 3 inches or the other tend to range from 4 to 6 inches, that's going to increase the discard mortality dramatically. And I recognize that on these different slot limits, the recreational, you've assigned an increase of either 4, 5, or 6%, depending on which one it is,
of the increased debt discards there'll be. But I would question, and I may be wrong, I hope you guys are right, I would question whether it would be as small as a 4, 5, or 6% increase, because my direct empirical observations over many decades is that if you're out there trying to catch your fish in a slot limit as small as 3 or 4 inches, the likelihood of catching your limit in that tiny slot limit is so small, and the probability of catching fish that will be released is so large, and since 9% of those are assumed to have died, and since obviously the recreational discard mortality has become the biggest segment of all the removals up and down the coast, I think slot limits are somewhat counterproductive. I realize it does in some way reduce the amount of fish taken, but I'm not sure the cost of having that many more dead discards is wise.
Thank you. That's a good point. It's the same here as Class B. The difference in the growth, 3 or 4 inches. You have to take the same year, but then you're going to kill some by going to these shots that should be larger.
Yes, some years it might not make a difference. If everything falls within the slot and it just happens to be a dominant year class and they're right between 20 and 23 inches as per this one 3AB, 3B5 option, but very seldom do the year classes fall perfectly within a slot limit. So if you've got dominant year classes that are just above and just below, your discard mortality is going to go through the roof. But I just wanted to add that in there because I have concerns about that. I know y'all have concerns. I just think they've been underestimated in this topic.
And who else would like to speak on option two? Seeing none, just get a show of hands for option three, where the commercial sector takes a smaller cut.
Can we go for more than one option?
Hands up.
Twice.
Absolutely. And would anyone like to take the floor and speak as to why they're in favor of option three? Maybe identify sub options in there as well.
Sir. I never said before, Arnold Stein, I'm president of the Eastern Shore Waters Association, and I've been asked to speak for people from Virginia Beach and also some places on the Western Shore. You know, I think it's a fallback thing. I really don't think we need to do anything. But, you know, just like on the recreational side, 18% reduction, that should be done through trying to do something about discord mortality. It doesn't really need to be done through the direct fishery. You need to address that. That's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. No matter what you do, when you have slot limits, you're increase the discord mortality. It's already the biggest player in it. It accounts for well over half of the mortality, and you want to increase it. You know, you're going to have fishermen that just hook and release fishermen. They're not going to take either one of them. So they're still going to be there. I don't think we need to do anything except address that. That needs to be addressed. And there's not been a willingness to do it. They were talking about circle hooks 20 years ago, and we're still talking about them. If you bought them then, they'd rust it out by now, sitting in your tackle box. So this is kind of a fallback thing, but I'm still with option one. But there are people, you know, on the commercial side, we'd be willing to do something, but we won't be willing to do very much. The 25% discard mortality is just a number that's arbitrary. Somebody thought up 25%. I don't know where it come from. There's never been a study that I'm aware of on any of the Gillnet boats in Virginia that showed discord mortality. You know, if you have me for an example, now my quota is 3,750 pounds. That would be 25% of that. So I would have to be throwing over 1,000 pound back.
I must be a very good fisherman or a very dumb one not to be able to manage my quota better than that. You know, when you get down to 300 or 400 pounds, you reduce your gear and different things. There's ways of doing it. And, you know, if Danny would catch a lot of fish and I had quota left, he would gladly let me get on the other end and take some of them. And everybody's basically that way. But I'm still, like I say, I'm still with option one. This will be a fallback, but I think it's totally unnecessary. You need to address to hook the release mortality.
Others want to comment to option three? Yeah, Kelly.
I'm not going to repeat the comments I made earlier that are sort of toward option three, the cumulative underages over the years, the lack of credit for proactive measures. Yeah, so put them down as my comments for option three. But I do want to build on what Ernie just mentioned as far as the 25%, having the target set 25% above the threshold and how arbitrary it is. I feel it's arbitrary too, and this one document from one of your previous people, as you know, you probably saw this, I'd kind of like to get your take on it. At the last ASMFC meeting, Desmond Kahn, who was your 17 and 14 years respectively on your technical committee and your stock assessment subcommittee, the document that he put on there, which obviously is contrary to whatever consensus the technical committee came up, I'm just going to read two sentences. The threshold is too high to be an overfishing threshold. Second, the target, which is arbitrarily set at 25% above the threshold, is so high it resembles the carrying capacity, which is the total abundance at the highest feasible level for a population, as opposed to a reasonable target for a population managed as the basis of a fishery. And he goes on with good explanations for that. And it's a pretty, how far, I mean, obviously this is at odds with what the technical committee came up with. Before you just mentioned to me, I'm assuming you all looked at Dr. Kahn's analysis of what the thresholds and targets are or should be. But before I ask you to comment on that, let me just mention that the fifth, because you guys have caught some flack unfairly, I think, for this one thing, that the plan has a 50% probability of success that's been assigned to it. But from all my 20-some years, and I've been representing Virginia Commercial on the advisory committee since 98, it looks at every level, whether it's the stock assessment subcommittee, the technical committee, the management board, that there's buffers of conservation risk aversion that are put in case there's an error in the calculations. And that 50% probability of success, I feel, is far higher than that, in that it's tempered by all these conservation risk aversion buffers at every level that are established for the benchmarks and all that. So I just want to mention that I think you guys could do a better job of defending the good work that you've done on these plans, because I think it's got a far higher than a 50% level of probability, unless, of course, the goal line has changed again. But anyway, that paper by Dr. Kahn that I'm pretty sure you would have read, right? Didn't you all get this?
I know what you're talking about.
Did you all analyze that to determine?
The TC has not seen that, because that was public comment submitted. If the board wants the technical committee to look at that paper, they can direct it to do so.
Because he was a member of the technical committee for 17 years.
Years ago.
But you can't show up at a meeting and basically build this out. That's pretty much what
the TC does not work for Desmond Kahn.
Yeah, oh, of course not. And obviously, their opinions are different on this.
But his comments about the reference points are really something that this document is not dealing with.
Okay.
That is something for the amendments or some future document to revisit. And it's definitely a management board decision.
As part of my written public comment, should I request then some kind of, whether it's a defense or just comment to this?
You should speak with your commissioners and have them advocate to have the TC look at that.
Okay. And Pat just asked me to send this to him, but I was just surprised that a document from a person that's as eminent as Dr. Kahn.
I talked to Dennis, but it was about something different.
Okay. I'm just surprised that it didn't even get looked at.
There are certain things that go in front of the technical committee. Yes. The technical committee is a body of the board.
Right.
So it has to come from the board for the TC to look at it.
Okay. Yeah, that gives me some guidance. I appreciate it.
All right, so let's move on. Anyone else with option three? Yes, sir, in the back.
Thank you.
just want to make a brief comment that I find it disturbing that the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission is willing to pit commercial versus recreational anglers, but not recognize state-to-state differences in the take. And if you're willing to do it for recreational and commercial, you ought to be willing to divvy that up state-to-state. So I'm in favor of option three, but I'm also in favor of doing a similar percentage breakdown by state. Maryland should get a heck of a lot bigger drop than Virginia. So you guys need to look at this thing more globally than that.
Max, before you comment, management options, just not three, but just in general. I think the biggest issue here is, as the technical committee has said and the management board has said, is we need to figure out a way to take an 18% reduction in the state. How we do that may not be best represented by these three options here, but there should be some equity between the various user groups.
Thank you. Other comments specific to option three? I haven't heard any specific sub-options under there, but doesn't mean I need to hear. Just throwing it out there for those who commented in favor of option three. Keeping in mind the
point. I'd like to have put another one in there. Will you do that?
What's that, sir?
Would you put another option with option three? Amendment to it or index?
Do you have a, is there a specific measure that you would like to see?
Put, add 24% back to the commercial quota that you took away and you promised you were going to give it.
I'll underline that one, too.
Yeah, underline it, too. Put a star by it, if you like.
How about highlighting option three instead of two?
Bold it.
Unfortunately, it won't allow me to do that. So you have to go to the next slide.
Keep going.
Do you want to hear from those that preferred option two, but if option three became the management option, do you want to hear our preferences for that?
Funny how that happens. I mean, what I'm really trying to do is just get a feel of the room. You know, I'm trying to get a feel of the room. Who likes which options? But I think it's important to remind everyone that the managers are going to sit down in October and they're going to pick one. So if you have a preference for a particular sub-option, that is really helpful information to tell them that this one had the most back, that this specific sub-option was favored by this room of people or this subgroup of this room of people. So if you have one in your mind and you're just not sharing it, that's fine. You can email me, you can submit that comment a number of different ways, but if you're willing to share now, please do so.
We prefer 3A2 and 3B4. 3A2 and 3B4. So 3 became the management options. And there we have a little more, for some reason we have a little more clear winners there in our poll.
Okay, so we do have the circle hook provision as well. I've heard some comments about the circle hook provisions. So there seems to be favor for them, right?
I think it's mandatory.
Mandatory, that's what I'm looking for.
Not suggested, because they've been suggesting it for 20 years. It should be mandatory, use it live day. You know, one of the problems you have in Maryland is they're using chum and J-hooks. Like the fish are in a frenzy then because there's blood in the water and they swallowed it up.
Are anyone else in favor of, so this would be option B that Ernie's referring to. Option B would require law basically for mandatory use of circle hooks.
With bait.
With bait.
When fishing with bait.
With
bait.
We support B. Yeah. Mandated use. Anglers tell me that, to lose too many fish. We'll learn how to use a circle plan on that. It's not hard.
Yeah. Just leave it alone.
Just leave it alone.
Yeah. It's not that hard.
Oh, jerk off.
Okay, now we've gone through all the options. We've put together a list of reasons why we support certain options. And we've gone through the circle options, circle hook options. Are there any closing comments that haven't been stated already? Additional comments, yes.
That doesn't have to do with the options.
I would like it to be about draft addendum 6. It doesn't have to be specific to an option. If it's about Virginia's efforts outside of the commission's process.
Cutting down on the mortality of recreational stuff.
I'm happy to take any other comments on the interstate management plan.
They did quite a bit of research with Dr. Graves and Dr. Neal for white marlin, the tagging studies that helped change the rules on bringing the marlin out of the water. I also fished in Alaska quite a bit, 13 trips up there. The first one up there, you keep all the salmon you wanted. You also take a salmon out of the water, get a picture, throw him back in. The last several years, you can't take a salmon out of the water unless you're keeping it. That fish has to stay in the water. And that cut down on the mortality rate of those salmon significantly and helped save the population. You can do the same thing with rockfish. You net the fish, bring them alongside the boat, unhook him and cut him loose, or just cut the line and let him go. You don't have to bring him in the boat, get your pictures taken with him, and then throw him, you know, drop him on the deck two or three times, and then throw him overboard and let him die. And I would like to see that as something that they would look at as an option. Just, if you bring the fish in the boat, you keep it. That's part of your creel limit. If you're not going to keep the fish, then you don't bring him in the boat. You unhook him in the water. You stick your head down inside the water, get a picture with him if you want to, but you don't have to bring that her in the boat. Usually it's a big fish. It's going to be a cow, so.
I
just
want
to make that comment.
Thank you. Other comments? Other final comments? Yes,
ma'am. I think it needs to be law that all these other states, this catch and release season, that's just crazy. I mean, they're just going out there and just catching fish and just chucking them back over, and apparently 42% of them is dying. So that's just insane. All these states that have them. Y'all need to do something about that and just shut that just right out. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. Other comments? Yes, sir.
Several comments. Actually, how long have you been with the ASMSC?
Going on 5 years.
5 years, okay. Well, 5 years ago, this fall earlier, we gave up 25% of our quota here for 3 years. That was the deal. Well, here it is now, 2 years after that, and we have still given it up. So someone has actually lied to us here. And it's hard for any of us to come here, whether we are commercial or recreational, to sit down here. We come here in good faith, but we don't believe, I don't think the ASMSC is behaving in good faith. If you take and go to a meeting there, you will watch Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New York all vote together in the block. It's almost like we've gone back in time 150 years and it's Reconstruction. The only thing that's missing is them playing the Battle Hymn of the Republic in the background. Now, as far as the fishing is concerned here, yes, you come down here, you're taking and trying to put recreational against commercial, and that commercial against recreational. What you're not doing with these addendums you come in here, what the ASMSC is not doing, is addressing where the real overages are at, where the real mortality is, and it is, as was brought earlier, a state-by-state thing. But they don't have the courage, they do not have the honesty to do this here. So that makes me look at this here as being just so much of a bogus mess going on here. I don't know who the creditors are playing to here, who they're trying to pet here, who they're trying to appease here. But if things are as bad a shape as what you're saying, that we've got to take this 18% quota here, cut here, it's still not going to get the job done because you've got other states, other fisheries, which are way above that, and 18% is still going to be a lot less than what's needed done to address the problem there. So that's what I've got to say about that.
Thank you, sir. Other comments?
One more comment. You know, when you were showing this stuff earlier, short-term pain, long-term gain, that doesn't work on the commercial side. when the fishery was recovered, and it was deemed recovered, and it kept increasing, they put a motion on the table to try to increase the commercial quota. New England killed it. It didn't go anywhere. Pat Augustine made it. I think Pat was there at the time. I do remember you now. But it was killed. So the recreational kept increasing. The commercial was held status quo. They took 25% away from us this time. The commercial lost 25%. The recreational, there's no real way to cramp down on them like it is commercial. The only way would be to give them tags. That would be, logistics would be terrible. So when we'll not get anything back. On the commercial side, you just won't. Because you can, you know, if the fish recovers, you can keep the same regulation, and the recreational fishermen are going to do much better because the opportunity is improved. So you're going to have a lot more people with the increased opportunity to go fishing. So their numbers are going to keep going up. Ours is going to be static because ours is controlled by a quota. So the reality ought to be up there that they've had opportunities before to increase the commercial quota when the recreational was going through the ceiling. They voted against it as a block. They'll vote against it now as a block. You've got three or four states that don't allow commercial fishing. Two of them take the quota and give it to the recreational for a special season. So there is no long-term gain for us. It's all just short-term and long-term pain.
Thank you.
I would like to dovetail with what Bernie just said. It's always been sort of a sore point down here that New England, and in fact most of the fisheries on the coast of North Virginia, are fundamentally based on catching spawning stock biomass. New York, for years, their minimum was 36 inches. Massachusetts, it was that or higher. So for years and years, that by definition is not only SSB, but female SSB predominantly. So fisheries are based on that, and at the same time, here in Virginia, we have a stringent spawning season closure. There are occasional short windows of time where the commercial fishery can catch some significant size fish, but they're very short, very fleeting. You've got to be there at the right time with the right gear. We're pretty much constrained to a regime of size limits that seem to be dictated by the northern states. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the overfishing we're looking at is on the spawning stock biomass. That's what, is that not right, Max? Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's where we've exceeded the target and the thresholds is the F on the SSB. But it does seem that if it's the spawning stock biomass that's being overfished or overexploited, and you've got certain states whose entire fishery is fundamentally based on those fish, that it seems unfair and inequitable to have the reductions equally borne by states that aren't really part of that problem. I don't think it's like a biomass problem. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. I don't think it's that the numbers of fish are low. It's that the spawning stock biomass, that's what has driven these reductions for years. And like Ernie mentioned, we took the big reductions in 2014 and others before that, but it leads me to a question that maybe it may have an opinion on this, Max. Why did Addendum 4 to Amendment 6 not work? Because, certainly, you know, what in your opinion or the staff's opinion, what was the fundamental flaw that caused us to be here? Because like Ernie said, we were more or less told that we would be getting all or at least part of those cuts we made in 2014 for the 2015, 16, and 17 season. That we'd be getting some of that back, but instead it carried into another year, and there was movement here until the newest benchmark stock assessment came out to at least get 10% back, but obviously we're here where we are now. Why did Addendum 4 not work, and what sector and what states would you estimate are basically responsible?
I don't think that's fair to put Max in that situation.
I am not going to comment.
Okay.
I don't think that's fair to...
Maybe, okay.
That's not what this public meeting is about. I mean, if you want to point a finger at somebody, you can, but that's... Matt has to work for these stakeholders.
I'm asking for his opinion.
I would tell him not to answer. I mean, he has to work with all the states. Keep in mind,
that's part of this document that we're publicly commenting on. Addendum 4 is specifically mentioned, and in there they mention issues that I just brought up. So that's why I'm asking that.
You can see from the numbers in that table the states in response.
Okay.
And that's all I would say, because I'm not going to name the state anymore.
Okay. All right.
You can look at the tables and see who's responsible for the debt discount.
Well, I don't want to name who's responsible either, but I would like to state that Virginia's commercial fishery is not responsible for any measure of any of these.
I have that comment from you already.
Okay.
Yeah,
we've heard that.
Yeah. New comments. Last final comment. Yes, in back.
Yeah, I'm a commercial fisherman, and I could probably legally catch more fish recreational in a year's time than I could with one unit set quota commercially. And if I was to get caught doing something wrong commercially, I could lose my livelihood. And when people get caught recreational, they just get a slap on the wrist and they go back the next week, catch more, and laugh and joke about it. And that's not right, to be able to go playing and catch more throughout the year than I can catch to support a family. We've been cut and cut and cut from 400 tags at 25 pound a piece to 1,500 pound a year, and that's a slap in the face.
Thank you, sir.
Last word.
All right, last word.
So just to wrap up, I mean, of course I didn't know we were being live streamed. The guy just texted me and said, "Oh, I'm listening to you guys on the live stream," but
I'm
cool with that.
Eight people,
but. I will say that it seems that our anglers are recreational anglers or conservation minded, and so far we are generally supportive of the BMRC emergency rules. So my guess is that's possibly going to stay and stick. But I will also say that for us at this moment in time is very confusing to the anglers. As you work this addendum, and we have this emergency rule in place. Know what is our season going to look like? And so it's confusing time for our anglers. We are going to ask, though, with this emergency rule, we hope that we get some concessions for the charter captains, because we're concerned that the emergency rule goes in effect just keeping one fish and no large fish at all, that is going to kill the charter industry. And how many people are really going to pull the boat for one fish and pay a charter is rate? So it may really kill off the industry starting from October through December for our fishery. So, but we are supportive of making cuts. And so you're going to get that from our Virginia recreational anglers.
Thank you. Any comments from Max?
Is the EPC issue going to be something debated at the annual meeting?
No.
Because it's in the document here, and I just wanted to say what
you
think it should remain close.
Just a show of hands, who recognizes themselves as a recreational angler?
Can you be both?
Can we be both?
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
What was the question?
Who recognizes themselves as a recreational angler?
Both.
Okay. Commercial?
I fish more as recreation than I do commercially because my quota is so low.
What about charter captains? Any charter captains here? Any charter captains? Just the one. That's a shame. Is there anything else for Max? Max, I want to thank you for coming. Appreciate
it. Max.
You did a really good job tonight. I don't know if you want to stay here for a few minutes and talk about what Virginia's doing, maybe 15 minutes. I don't really want to go much longer than that, if you don't mind. But, I think you're all aware right now what Virginia's proposing is to move forward with this addendum to get ahead of it. So we were considering recreationally one fish tag limit, 36-inch maximum. Those two things, and then commercially, we're going to the size of the gill net to 9 inch in the ocean and 7 inches in the bay. So those are, that's what the emergency order was. And I said at the beginning of the meeting, we did this emergency order. It brought a lot of attention, and that's, we really didn't have much choice. We either did it as a request, and then we had the public hearing on September 24th, and people would have 9 days to adjust to it. But, you know, you still have an opportunity. It's, if there's a public meeting on the 24th in this room, I can let everybody know it's going to be, you know, the last meeting, the commission moved it to the beginning, so there's, you know, we can do it and get it going and get it out of the way. Usually we go after all habitat issues, but you can come, you can provide comments, you can go on our website and see all of our commissioners. If you want to write the commissioners and let them know what your thoughts are, you know, on those issues. And, you know, I'm not saying those aren't going to be the only ones. I mean, there may be some other ones that come up as well, as we, especially, you know, whatever happens at ASMFC in October. But we're getting ahead of that, and we're really hoping that, you know, the, what we do from that, it will provide a conservation equivalent. So, you know,
do you think we'll get credit for what we do proactively? Because in the past, we haven't.
I would think we would, because it's pretty close. I mean,
yeah.
What do you think, Max? You were there at the board meeting when there was a lot of discussion about not giving states or jurisdictions credit for proactive measures.
Kelly, one day you're going to realize that I am a neutral, unbiased person.
I appreciate you being here taking the questions.
I would assume most states are going to be putting in some kind of conservation policy. I've heard rumors what Maryland is considering.
Are they doing it proactively?
No, they're not doing it. The only state that does proactively is us, Maryland, and someone else. Pennsylvania, maybe? There's a few states that have done a few things proactively.
Who up at the ASMFC will be making the determination of whether proactive states should get
there? It's a board decision.
It's a board decision.
It'll be a board decision.
Everything has been at the
commission. I thought Rob already asked the board about the 7 inch, and they said no. I thought that come up at a meeting like back in January or February.
The BSMAC?
Yeah.
The decision was made to put, you know, the 7 inch was put in at Maryland, and Maryland has a 7 inch, and so does Potomac River.
Well, Maryland's one of the problems while we're sitting in this room.
But we don't have.
Well, I wouldn't go with nothing.
We decided we don't have a maximum, so we decided to put a maximum in for those.
September 24th.
So, if you want, you can. Yeah, I have a business card here. If you want to send any comments about Virginia's proposal to me, anything else goes to Max. Anything on the addendum? I have the names.
Is it the morning, the 24th, or the afternoon?
I'll let you know. That's what happened last time. We did it in the morning, so it's up to the commissioner. I'll find out.
You got to know that.
Yeah.
I appreciate the kind of attack.